Hi, thanks for joining us this morning. I'm Chrissy Mernon, and my guests are here to promote the 4th Annual San Antonio Walk Against Genocide. Susan Smiley is with the San Antonio Coalition Against Genocide, and she brought along with her this morning author, artist, and poet, a former therapist, Tina Karagulian, and Haig Panoyan.
Panoyan.
We've been practicing on pronunciation of his name, and they are of Armenian descent. Their families survived the Armenian genocide 100 years ago. So they're going to tell their family stories. And we'll start, though, with Susan. Tell me about the 4th Annual San Antonio Walk Against Genocide that's coming up. Why do we have it here?
Well, there actually are walks that are held all over the country. We've been doing the one here in San Antonio, as you said, for 4 years now. It's to raise awareness around the topic of genocide and mass atrocities, to educate people, to give them an opportunity to learn how they can become involved in helping to stop and prevent genocide, because a lot of people think of genocide as being something historical, something that happened in the past. You know, we're commemorating the 100th anniversary of the Armenian genocide, but there actually is active genocide and mass atrocities happening in the world today. So there is this huge community of activists who work towards both educating people about what's going on and then trying to find solutions and try to come up with strategies to prevent these things from even happening, because there are many points along the way in which if the international community would intervene, we could prevent these things from even occurring.
Mm-hmm. So I just ask, what can I do?
Well, that's a really big question. I think the first thing is just become informed and seek out opportunities to let your voice be heard. The international community and our government in particular will not act unless they're hearing from their constituents that we want them to act. And I'm not talking about starting a war. It usually is much lower level interventions than that. A lot of it is diplomatic. There's a lot of pressure that can be put on some of these countries in terms of sanctions and things like that, that are easy for us to do, that can save lives and change the course of how things happen. As long as these governments that are perpetrating violence against their own citizens feel like they have impunity and that they can just get away with these things, they'll keep doing it. If the international community says, no, this is really unacceptable, then they'll change strategies. They have to. So those are the kind of things that you can do, is just make a phone call, sign a petition, write a letter saying, I don't want this to be happening. Donate money. There's lots of good organizations doing work on the ground in the parts of the world where some of this stuff is happening, both supporting people who have been affected by it and, you know, training people, providing education, trying to do things to sort of alter the course of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So lots and lots and lots of opportunities. But, you know, you can come to our event to find out more. We'll have lots of literature available. We'll have some advocacy actions that people can take right there at the event. And we'll have information sheets available for continued action they can take. You can go to our website, which is walkagainstgenocidesa.org, and look for resources there. And there's many, many other organizations in the U.S. that are doing different things around this topic. And so you can sort of find some piece of it that appeals to you. Some of them are religion-based. Some of them are topic-based. Some of them are helping people currently being affected. Some of them are doing planning, trying to alter what happens in the future. So lots and lots and lots of different ways to get involved.
So tell me about the walk, where it is, and the time, please.
The walk is at the campus of the Jewish community in San Antonio, which is at the corner of Wurzbach Parkway and Northwest Military. And we're sort of in the back of the building next to the swimming pool is where we'll be holding the walk. And we'll have music, and we'll have a couple of speakers. Tina is going to be one of the speakers who will be talking here in just a minute. And then we'll take just a short walk. It's about a half a mile. We sort of walk around the campus. So the walk itself is kind of symbolic. And then, like I said, we'll have tables of information. We'll have opportunities for people to sign things and make donations if they want to. We'll have T-shirts for sale. The event runs from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. on that day. And the Holocaust Museum, which is located inside the building where we're holding the walk, we'll be open from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. So people can come early, visit the Holocaust Museum, which is free, and then come to the event.
So when you look back through history and you talk about genocide, what comes to mind?
Wow. I think the thing that comes to most people's minds is the Holocaust. But we also have Armenia, which happened prior to the Holocaust. And in fact, Hitler used what happened in Armenia as a blueprint for planning the Holocaust. There's a famous quote, and it's unclear whether or not he actually said this, but he probably did think it at some point, was that nobody remembers the Armenians, you know, and so he just figured that he could get away with what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And then since then, you know, we've had Cambodia, we've had Rwanda, we've had Bosnia, we've had Darfur, Sudan, which is still ongoing. That genocide is still happening, and things have actually gotten worse in the last year than they've been almost since the beginning of the genocide. So that is not something that's over. Burma, the Congo isn't actually classified as genocide, but there's lots of mass atrocities occurring there. And then other areas of the world also.
You know, they seem so far away, and so I could see how people in the U.S., you know, don't feel like they're affected by it.
Right. Yeah. And I guess I can understand that sentiment. I think that those of us that are involved in this work feel like it doesn't matter. You know, they're human beings, and we would like to think that somebody would think of us if we were in this kind of situation. You know, they're often in very difficult positions, unable to do very much for themselves, and they need outside assistance. They need the international community to come in and support them. They need to be the ones who sort of restructure how their country works, but they need help to get to a point where they can even do that. And the other thing is, and this is the reason people really should care, is that it affects our national security. I mean, you could make a huge argument around that, that these places that are so unstable, that have so much violence occurring, become breeding grounds for terrorists. And this is not something that I'm thinking the Department of Defense would like for these mass atrocities to stop occurring, because it makes it more dangerous for all of us. Mm-hmm. And so that's actually a really compelling self-interest reason to be involved, because it can impact us.
Okay. Now, so this Armenian genocide of 100 years ago, how did you find Tina? Because Tina wrote the book, It Is Time, Tina Karagulian, and It Is Time is part of the history of the Armenian genocide.
Yeah, I don't remember how Tina and I first met. We've known each other for years. So I think I just contacted her, you know, about this event this year, because we did want to commemorate the 100th anniversary.
So introduce her, please. Tell me about Tina.
gosh. Well, I think you already said it. Artist, poet, and former therapist, and just a really wonderful, warm human being who has a lot of... I think you're really going to like what she has to say about how this genocide affected her. And actually, I think that that's a really important thing to recognize, is that she's the granddaughter of a survivor of the genocide. She never met her grandmother, and yet she's been impacted deeply by what happened in her family. And so this, it's not like it just impacts the people who it initially happens to. It becomes generational and just gets passed down, this violence and trauma, which is another reason to try to work to prevent it and to stop it from occurring, because it carries on for, you know, very long time. So anyhow, Tina has some wonderful things to say about that.
All right.
And so let me let her talk now.
Okay. So Tina, tell me about Armenian genocide and your family story, please.
Well, my grandmother and my grandparents actually walked twice through the desert. They were, the first time they went to Baghdad, Iraq, and the second time ended up in Aleppo, Syria. As we know, both very conflicted areas at this time. I could have been born in any of those two cities. Even though I never met her, I felt like she was calling me to know her story, to know who she was beyond the stories even. And so in some sense, it's a love story, if you want to put it that way.
Mm-hmm. So what was going on? You know, for people who are bad with geography, where is Armenia? And what was going on 100 years ago?
Well, I think Hai can speak more to this, but I can tell you a little bit. Taner Akçam is a Turkish genocide professor who wrote a book about this very topic. And he said, you know, some of the conditions that were going on at that time, I think 60% of the land, I believe, and again, don't quote me, was being taken away by superpowers. And so the Ottoman Turkish government at that time felt like we needed to take some land back for ourselves. And so an ethnic cleansing began, and a definite extermination of the Armenian population, people they had lived with for a long time, began. And of course, some of that began in the late 1800s, but 1915 and then again in 1922, in that time frame, were two big deportation times.
So they were, it's like we're taking your land and we're getting rid of you, either by sending you away or killing you. That was...
Yes. So there were a lot of rapes. Depending on where you were deported to, some people in Adana were completely burned in a mass pile. So we didn't have the gas chambers that the Jewish people had, but we had lots of marches in desert where there was no food or water. And so people died of starvation, left unburied, obviously, and had to just keep moving forward and somehow surviving. And people had to make some difficult decisions. My grandmother had to make a difficult decision during one of those marches. Was she had a two-year-old, and she feared for her daughter and decided to leave her behind with, I believe it was some Armenians, Turkish-speaking Armenians, who she thought she would be able, they would be able to survive, mm-hmm. you know. And then later found out, oh my gosh, they had to march too. She found out through the grapevine as she's walking and miraculously found her daughter, which just defied so many things that you can't even imagine. But her daughter was very angry that she was abandoned by her mother. And
the two-year-old?
Mm-hmm. But sadly, both... the two-year-old and an infant that my grandmother had with her could not survive due to malnutrition. My grandmother couldn't breastfeed them. There was, you know, nothing to eat to create breast milk. So she had to see a lot of that on her journey.
So where did your grandmother wind up?
She ended up the second time around in Aleppo, Syria. But before that, she was separated from her husband. They came from a city called Zeytun, which was in the mountainous region. They were farmers. They loved the land so much, they decided to go back when they were in Baghdad for a while because they missed the land. They mm-hmm. tilled the land. It was part of who they were. And so when they returned, they realized, oh, I guess this wasn't what it was supposed to be. There was some kind of window of safety that was taken away. And my grandfather was imprisoned. And so there was no indication that they would ever be reunited. And yet, miraculously, that also happened. And I'm going to tell that story on April 12th at the San Antonio Walk. It's a beautiful reunion story. It's very moving, and it's probably one of my favorite of the family lore. Mm-hmm. But the other piece of that story, which I think is really important, is that a Turkish man saved my grandfather's life. And had he not done so, my mother and I would not have been born. So I focused... As a former therapist, I worked with many people around stories, telling them, grieving them, and having others witness to those stories to help them heal. Mm-hmm. So when you asked earlier, what can somebody do? In our community of even Americans, we can listen to those stories and honor them and give them our full heart and ears. But then there's a point where you have to look to see where are the reconciliation moments, where are the healing places? Because I think you can also get stuck in endless circular thinking around suffering that you can never move forward. And sadly, many Armenians have seen this, and I think this is why the wound of not having the genocide fully acknowledged by the U.S. and Turkish governments is particularly painful for Armenians. It's because we've seen the emotional effects of that get passed down, and we've had to heal them. Future generations have had to heal them. So you're talking three different generations, in my case, mm-hmm. Of having to heal something. And many have not been able to survive that. So wanting that healing and resolution for me is particularly important. And for me, it's to look beyond and say, I don't identify myself with that suffering so much so that I can't move forward in my life and live, because I know my grandmother wanted that. She wanted us to live vibrant and beautiful lives. And she had to live through a harrowing part of history, but the point was to move us forward and to do what Susan's talking about, which is to end it around the world, not just within our own culture. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think about women in Syria now who are trying to raise their children amongst this horrible kinds of violence and feel lost and alone and stuck in those suffering thoughts. What can we do for them? You know, And what can we do with this negative Islamic hate that is perpetrated, even in this country, you know, with misunderstanding? We can reach out to our sisters and brothers, the Muslim people who are just wanting to live peaceable lives we can in this country do just even that, reach out, form a relationship with different people of different cultures outside of who we know and say, I support you in your right to your religion and your right to live peaceably. You know, I can support you in telling your full story and your truth, and I can do this one piece that I'm led to do, because you don't want to force someone to do something you're not led to do, but do something that works for you, that you can promote healing.
Okay, so now we're going to bring in Haig Ponoyan. And so tell me your family story. We heard Tina's story about the Armenian genocide of 1915 and how her family was affected. How about yours?
It's very similar to Tina's family story. The survivors of my family also crossed the desert, ended up in Aleppo, Syria, and they continued their journey further south to Egypt, where I was born later in 1951.
Mm-hmm.
It is remarkable that after 100 years, the massacre of innocent Armenian lives is not recognized globally, and the action of the Ottoman Empire not condemned. One wonders if Nazi Germany would have committed horrible crimes against humanity if the Armenian genocide was recognized and guilty parties in ruling circles of the Ottoman Empire were punished. Adolf Hitler, in his August 22nd, 1939 speech, said, quoting, "Send them to death mercilessly and without compassion, men, women, and children of Polish derivation and language. Who, after all, speaks today of the annihilation of the Armenians?" Displacement and massacre of Armenians were common in the late 19th century in Ottoman Empire. The 1844 general census conducted by Ottoman regime reported about 2 million Armenians living in the Ottoman territories, mainly in Anatolia. Series of massacres cost up 300 Armenian lives in the late 19th century, with enormous property losses. But during World War I, starting in 1915, the brutal killings and expulsions reached their peak. On the night of April 24th, in Constantinople, the Turkish government arrested over 200 Armenian intellectuals. Hundreds more were apprehended soon after. All were sent to prisons in interior Anatolia, Çankırı and Ayash, where most were executed. The widespread slaughters and looting intensified to unprecedented levels as the government skillfully manipulated its otherwise peaceful and friendly Muslim population. The massive deportation started, where Armenians, mostly women and children, were forced into death marches towards the Mesopotamian desert, such as Derzor Desert, where hundreds of thousands of Armenians perished. The tragedy was widely covered by the European and U.S. press and has been documented by journalists and diplomats, including the U.S. ambassador to the Ottoman Empire, Henry Morgenthau, who wrote, "When the Turkish authorities gave the orders for these deportations, they were merely giving the death warrant to a whole race. They understood this very well, and in their conversations with me, they made no particular attempt to conceal the fact." Today, all Armenians want is a recognition by Turkish government that the genocide happened, so we can have a closure and hopefully heal to our wounds.
So why has it never been recognized since we know about it and it killed over a million people?
Well, actually, the Armenian genocide has been officially recognized by many, many countries. And just I would like to take a moment and list them in alphabetical order. Argentina, Armenia, Belgium, Canada, Chile, Cyprus, European Union, France, Germany, Greece, Iran, Lebanon, Lithuania, Netherlands, Poland, Russia, Slovakia, Sweden, Switzerland, Vatican City, and Venezuela.
But the one that matters is Turkey, and Turkey does not recognize it.
Yes, indeed. And also, when you hear this list, some of you might be thinking that I must have accidentally left out a name from the list.
The United States?
The name of our homeland, the United States of America, the country that is the symbol of democracy and freedom, the global avant-garde of human rights and justice. Well, it's a sad reality that for 100 years now, our politicians in Washington, D.C. caved in to the threats, political maneuverings, and aggressive lobbying of Ankara, the political capital of Turkey. Over the last 100 years, several congressional resolutions were introduced to officially recognize the Armenian genocide, and each time the Turkish government managed to put pressure on Washington and block the process. The latest example was in October 2000, when a resolution to recognize the Armenian genocide was expected to pass in overwhelming fashion. However, minutes before debate was to begin on the resolution, House Speaker J. Dennis Hastert pulled it from the agenda, citing a warning from President Clinton that its passage could have far-reaching negative consequences.
It would damage U.S.-Turkey relations,
relations,
we have military interests there, and Turkey's kind of important to the U.S., and so...
Yeah, however, the irony is that we are investing billions and billions of taxpayers' money into those Air Force bases in Turkey. However, when it matters most, ironically, Turkish government is not allowing us to use those air forces for our national security reasons. So one wonders, are we wasting our taxpayer dollars and unnecessarily caving in to Turkish government threats and political maneuverings?
So what's it going to take to get an acknowledgement, and you would want a subsequent apology from the government of Turkey?
We always hopeful, sadly, our hopes were renewed in 2008 when the presidential candidate Barack Obama said to the Armenian genocide that the facts are undeniable. And he continued, America deserves a leader who speaks truthfully about the Armenian genocide and responds forcefully to all genocides. I intend to be that president. Well, today I have a message for my president, President Obama. For 6 years, you broke your promise to the survivors of the Armenian genocide and to their descendants. I, a descendant of the genocide survivor, urge you on the day of its 100th year anniversary to rise above the politics and officially recognize the Armenian genocide.
I can speak, Chrissy, to, and I believe it's about shame. Shame of being blamed. It's very core shadow stuff. And I believe that the government of Turkey does not want to have that tarnished reputation. It is very painful to have that. Although the important thing is that it happened, their ancestors did this. It is not them. And I think a lot of Armenians know that. It is the repeated denial, I think, that is just painful. But we can move past it if you're able, again, to move past the emotional pain of it. But if you're overwhelmed with shame and blame in your consciousness, there's not much room for other perspectives. That's why it's important to tell stories. It's important to find a way to heal your own journey so that you can reach beyond the aisle to another perspective. It's a superpower issue. It's about power. It's about control. But I don't think most Armenians want reparations or land, which is another fear, I'm sure.
I was going to say, do you think that if the government says, we're so sorry about this, then people will say, well,
there are some, and I'm not going to say that. I do believe there are some
who want it. Stuff was taken away, yes.
Right. Uh-huh. But I think for most Armenians, just the recognition of the fact is sufficient, is to a way of honoring our grandparents. Now, the other piece of information is that a lot of Armenians' women were kidnapped and became grandmothers to Turkish people who have now mixed blood. And there have been books written about that too, which I think is on the SACOG website. So it's interesting because it's a shared history. Our ancestors now have come together. So it really behooves us to heal this on a deeper level. But again, you can't force someone to do something outside of you. And so I think I have focused more on what can I control? What can I do? So I think it's on a one-on-one level, meeting Turkish women, which I have, and having that kind of that conversation and dialogue where people who are open to it is a step you can take instead of waiting for governments to do that.
What do you say? What do you say to Turkish women?
Turkish women in Turkey? I do believe that many of them just don't have a knowledge of the true history. It has been taken away from them by their government, and I don't blame them for that. I believe that the ones that I've spoken to know that there was something was amiss. Mm-hmm. Something didn't make sense. Why did people leave their houses behind, and why were there people searching in the backyard for and digging for the gold that our ancestors left behind, hoping they would return to use it? There was a lot that makes sense when we have those dialogue and that conversation. But the end for me is not to say, I want land, I want this and all that. It's more about healing on the heart level, having reconciliation. And I do believe the Turkish women I have met are so open to that. And I'm going to relay one of those stories, too, on April 12th of my personal experience.
And now, is that your book, It Is Time? Is that
It is. And it's not purely just about the Armenian genocide. It is about a lot of times when women's voices have been blocked, including my own. And in writing of it, I was able to take away the pain from my heart and actually have a concrete place to hold it. So I wanted to know more about my grandmother. I said, who is my grandmother? I wanted to know her. I was excited to know about her. I didn't know I was going to get all this horrible stuff to go with it. And I thought, someday my grandchildren, I want them to hear in my voice what happened directly, but not to have to carry the suffering anymore. And once I wrote this book, what was freeing was that I could make room for compassion. I could make room for other perspectives. So it is sometimes a daunting journey, but the healing journey is crucial for future generations.
Our guests this morning, Tina Karagulian and Haig Panoya. You've got something else to say, Haig?
Yes, I would like to wrap up this by mentioning about the an encouraging development in the last 20-25 years in Turkey, a positive shift where many intellectuals, human rights activists, professors, writers, historians, economists. I have a long list here in front of me. I don't want to read all the names. These people are in the last 20-25 years openly speaking in Turkey and abroad about what happened to the Armenians, and this is giving us hope that this shift, this movement will intensify to levels where it's going to be a decent pressure from inside on the Turkish government to finally make the right move and accept the Armenian genocide.
Okay. And Susan Smiley, San Antonio Coalition Against Genocide, is here with Tina and Haig. And you are inviting people to the 4th annual San Antonio Walk Against Genocide.
Yes, and I just wanted to say one more thing about the Armenian genocide before we go on to that. There actually was another resolution introduced in the House of Congress, House of Representatives, last Wednesday, Armenian Genocide Truth and Justice Resolution. So this happens in almost every session of Congress. So again, if you feel moved, call your representative and tell them you support this measure of recognizing the Armenian genocide. And I did think of another website that actually people really should go to learn more and to become better informed. It's called movingbeyondwitness.org. And the purpose of it is to get April nationally recognized as Genocide Awareness and Prevention Month. And the moving beyond witness means moving beyond being a witness to genocide and actually doing things to help prevent genocide in the world. And so there's lots of good links on there. There's an action packet, and so people can really learn a lot. And then again, our website is walkagainstgenocidesa.org, and you can go there to learn all the details of the walk.
And your walk is Sunday, April 12th, 2 to 4 at the Jewish Community Center, Northwest Military Highway at Wurzbach Parkway.
Right.
We'll see you there. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.